mining technology firm Janya, which has been involved in defense work. There are now supercomputers crunching away at data posted to Facebook, Twitter, and countless websites and blogs in multiple languages, all to find links between people, places, and events that could represent security threats. Challenges still remain in content analysis, notes Srihari, that is, in understanding context, metaphors, local jargon, and other complexities of language that can trip up a computer. But headway is being made here, as it is in understanding the emotional content of language. Such an understanding can allow analysts to zero in on posts from people who may be expressing intense anger while discussing sensitive potential targets, such as airports or other crowded public places. The biggest challenge to data mining may be finding the data that isn't publicly posted. The sort of people who carry out a September 11th attack aren't posting about it on Twitter, says Srihari. What's more, notes security researcher Richard Bloom at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, false positive and false negative results in anti-terror data mining can be highly damaging. Even if we're missing less than a percent, we're letting bad guys get away, he says, and falsely tagging people as bad guys has huge implications for society. Smarter video surveillance. Another hope for technology is that of hooking up video cameras to computers capable of recognizing suspicious behavior in airports and elsewhere. But such systems, while under development, are still far too inaccurate to add much security, notes Bloom. He adds that the technology still has to take a back seat to the far more costly but far more effective technique pioneered by the Israelis and now being adopted at U.S. airports of briefly but rigorously questioning passengers with a skilled eye to detecting behavioral anomalies that merit more intense scrutiny. It's not as simple as spotting people who seem stressed out, says Bloom. Most people who are stressed out aren't terrorists. Our borders remain far too porous as well, notes the report. Networks of sensors deployed at borders and coastlines have so far fallen short of hopes for them, says Carafano. We're still working on getting sensors that are sensitive enough and on techniques for interpreting the data from them, he notes. We remain stuck with a particular vulnerability to bioweapons, he adds, where technology has done much more to add to the threat than help us guard against it. Every time we come up with a way to deliver a medicine more effectively, we're creating the potential for engineering more deadly bioweapons, he says. We really need more cutting-edge biotech countermeasures. At least we can't blame technology for the continued failure, noted in the report, to link up the communications networks used by different public safety agencies in different localities. That's strictly a planning problem, says Strayer. It's just a matter of getting agreements between senior public safety officials, he says. Until now, they've been putting in systems that tend to meet their own needs instead of worrying about how to integrate them with everyone else's. There's no technological solution yet for bureaucracy and self-interest. Next, in Will Super Wi-Fi Live Up to Its Name, Scott Woolley reports on how the next generation of Wi-Fi was supposed to offer a big boost in capacity and range. It's likely that a few years from now, Americans' laptops, smartphones, and other wireless devices will be able to get online using Super Wi-Fi, a new standard that will increase capacity in places where regular Wi-Fi networks have become overcrowded. The bad news? Most people won't be able to use those airwaves to make long-range connections, which was supposed to be the major technological advance that would put the super in Super Wi-Fi. A new model for managing America's airwaves was unveiled recently as part of a plan by Federal Communications Commission Chairman Julius Genachowski to ease what he calls America's spectrum crisis. As wireless devices proliferate, Genachowski has repeatedly said, the U.S. needs to free up more spectrum for modern uses. Right now, a giant swath of America's best airwaves is used mainly by local TV stations. The band is almost 300 megahertz wide, slightly more raw capacity than AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, and Sprint have combined. The idea of Super Wi-Fi is to make use of the vacant airwaves that lie between existing TV stations' frequencies, gaps known as white spaces. However, other applications, such as wireless microphones, already have some rights to those frequencies. That is where an FCC-approved database, which was opened recently for public testing, comes in. It will allow someone who, for example, wants to use a wireless microphone for a musical in Reno, Nevada, to register where he needs to use those airwaves. New Super Wi-Fi devices can access that database.